Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
All right, folks, welcome in to Pickaxe and Roll, brought to you by our good friends over at Superbook Sports. I'm your host, Ryan Blackburn, at NBA Blackburn on Twitter, part of the Mile High Sports Podcast Network, and I am excited to chat about this Denver Nuggets win as the Nuggets defeat the Washington Wizards. Final score, 113-104. Good to see you, folks. Good to see everybody hanging out. Obviously, an interesting time to be a Nuggets fan after you play the Sixers, you play the Celtics, and then I have it titled here, the Nuggets handled the Wizards with some disdain, unfortunately, as they certainly did not take that game seriously, or at least one player did. One player certainly did, and he was Nikola Jokic. It was a very, very impressive performance from Nikola. And one I think that a lot of people were very happy about, and you get to see Jokic kind of show out and do what he's supposed to do and take advantage of a bad Eastern Conference opponent, which somebody that I think a lot of fans know of has been doing for a little bit here. I'm your host, Ryan Blackburn. Make sure to hit that like button, hit that subscribe button if you can. If you are new to the program, if you haven't followed Mile High Sports yet, we continue to grow the program over here, and it has been growing rapidly, which has been awesome to see. We've put a lot of heart and stock into it, and I think we have borne out some awesome results for people. It's been good. It has been good, and I hope that everybody has enjoyed my content just as much as I have enjoyed putting it out for all of you. So thank you so much. All right, let's get into this game. Let's talk about what happened. Let's go through the game flow. I mentioned the word disdain in my topic sheet here because it was really disdainful in terms of the performance, and that the Wizards are just so bad. They are a horrible, horrible basketball team, and they are now 3-16 at home, which is really hard to do. Just a very, very interesting matchup, I guess, for Denver after... You play these massive, massive games. Everybody's getting up for it. Two of the most important games of the season, I'd say. And then you've got to follow it up with the Wizards. Bennett Durando, who is in Washington, actually reported that Denver was not able to go to the White House even for this trip. I was talking about that as a possibility. I didn't get it confirmed whether they would or not. And as it turns out, they did not because the White House was tripping. But... Look, it is what it is. Denver will make this a spot on their road trip, and that is all it will be. And then they'll come back at some point. It wouldn't surprise me if they come back. I think maybe when they go to Miami, but have they played in Atlanta yet? I'm trying to think of places that are kind of proximal to Washington, D.C. that they haven't played in. Cedric, who cares about the White House? Come on, man. Like, it's a tradition for the NBA team to be able to go to the White House and be the focal point of the day. That's where ESPN and all these national outlets will send they'll say, "Hey, look, this is a great opportunity for a team like the Nuggets to be in the spotlight again." And like Denver likes to Well, okay, so there was a reason why no team did it from 2016 to 2020. We will breeze right past that because I don't want to get into that. But while things are like relatively okay, might as well take advantage of the opportunity. But look, is what it is. Most sports teams do it, and would have been nice to see Denver do it. But if you haven't read Bennett's story, I implore you to read it at the Denver Post. He does a great, great job over there. Okay, so this game for the Nuggets, let's actually talk about basketball. This game from the Nuggets was one that was never in doubt, in my opinion. And it's just not really a surprise to me that Denver would be in this spot where they clearly were better and Jokic is in great form, played a great basketball game, played 36 minutes, unfortunately, because Denver's backup center spot is so disgustingly bad right now. But either way, Jokic plays 36 minutes, has 42 points, 12 rebounds, 8 assists, 2 steals, and 2 blocks. I think he had a 26-6-5 with 2 steals and 2 blocks at halftime, and there was a stat that nobody had ever done that in a half since those kinds of numbers have been tracked since like 1996-1997. Pretty impressive numbers for Nikola Jokic, who shot 15 of 20 from the field, 12 of 14 from the free throw line. He did not attempt a single three, and I don't think he even attempted a single mid-range shot. He was all paint, and for whatever reason, the Wizards did not double him very often. Most of the time, they just left Daniel Gafford to handle him. Good luck. Good luck. That's all I can say to that strategy. Gafford's a funny player because he's clearly not as bad as he is made to look in these matchups with a Jokic, with an Embiid. But because he is so small and because the Wizards' defense around him is so bad, it's not surprising that he gets cooked all this time because they just left him on an island. They left him to die. And boy, did he. He was in a real unfortunate situation. It was just that's a tough one. That is a tough one for sure. But really, it was everybody. Like, anytime Marvin Bagley was on Jokic, he cooked him. Anytime they switched a Kyle Kuzma or Denny Avdia or somebody like that onto him, they cooked him. The Wizards are a small team. Like, you look at their bench, DeLon Wright, Landry Shamet, Bilal Coulibaly, Corey Kispert, Marvin Bagley. Like, that's their bench lineup. And they did do some staggering, but, like, still, it's a small group. And anytime that Daniel Gafford's, like, the main guy in the middle, that's going to be tough. And then they just don't have a lot of size to really combat a team like the Nuggets, especially when the Nuggets are locked in. And they weren't really locked in for a while, but it's a pretty interesting time. I've always thought that Gafford was fine. It's just like he's clearly overmatched in matchups against the best of the best. And Jokic clearly showed that. Last night, was just a marvelous performance for Jokic, who got cheers from the opposing fan base, which is a pretty surprising thing. I'm going to talk about Jokic a little bit more in the second and third segments because we're doing an MVP update later, but we'll go to the rest of the game flow right now. Michael Porter Jr., I didn't expect him to play that well. He ended up playing great. He was very, very good in this one, and had scored 19 points, had 2 steals and 2 blocks himself, 8 of 14 from the field, 3 of 7 from 3. Very efficient performance, and he did it in a variety of different ways. The 3 of 7 from 3, you could say, oh man, maybe he should have gone 4 of 7 or 5 of 7. I don't know. Like, this is kind of an average 3-point shooting performance for Porter, which is 42% from 3. So, like, good on him. Good on him for showing up in that regard and hitting those threes. 8 of 14 means that he was 5 of 7 from 2, and he was hitting some nice pull-ups. He was hitting some nice off-the-dribble shots and had a really nice dribble sequence in the first half where he put together a variety of hesitations, crossovers, just maneuvered his way past a Kyle Kuzma, past the rim protection for the Washington Wizards, and made a nice reverse layup on the other side of the floor. And just looked very, very good. I loved what I saw from Porter, and I didn't expect him to play that well, just given that he was sick on the injury report and was questionable heading into the game. I thought he had the flu, thought he had a sickness or something close to it, and he just didn't play like it. He looked pretty active, pretty engaged, and the defense was very good as well. So plus 13 for him. Obviously, a lot of that is because you are sharing the floor with Jokic when he's going off, but I don't know. Like, I was very impressed with how he handled himself, and he was the second best Nugget last night. Like, there's, it's pretty clear. That was a nice performance from Porter, a good reminder performance that when he has more opportunities within the flow, then there are opportunities for him to really shine. I liked in particular, I don't know if this was like the best segment of his game, but the Nuggets rotation, because Peyton Watson got injured at a point last night in the first half, I liked what Denver did with their rotation after that, where they're like, okay, we're just going to bring back in Michael Porter and we're going to play him next to Jamal Murray. We're going to play Christian Brown. We're going to play Reggie Jackson. And we're going to play, at that point, it was Zeke Nnaji, a backup center. I like playing Murray and Porter on the second unit together. Reminds me of what Tobias Harris and Tyrese Maxey were doing to the Nuggets in the Sixers game, where you have your second and third best scorers in the minutes on the floor where Embiid was not on the floor. This time it was Jokic, and Jokic who put up 42 points, and when he's on the floor, you want to feature him as much as possible because he's dominant as hell. It doesn't leave a lot of opportunities for Porter or Murray when he's out there, and I know that Murray still got up 23 shots. A lot of those were when he was not on the floor with Jokic, and like his usage rate in that time was through the roof and didn't really do that well with it. But it was nice to see in that second quarter, especially Murray and Porter play together. I thought that Murray looked for Porter throughout the game and was just a pretty solid option there. So I think that that's a lineup that Denver can go to in the playoffs. There's a lot of things that they can do, and I think that there are going to be good options for Denver in a playoff run where Peyton Watson can move up and down the lineup. Christian Brown will move up and down the lineup. Reggie Jackson may play. He may not play. KCP played 35 minutes. Aaron Gordon only played 31. When Denver has to really kick into gear on the playoff lineups, they can mix and match. And I like seeing what Murray and Porter can do with the second unit. Now, could Denver still need a second unit center? Yeah. And we'll talk about that a little bit more in the second segment, because I think it definitely is a nice juxtaposition, if you will, between where Jokic has been and what he's been able to do. And anytime he's off the floor, it's just an adventure in its own right. So, but yeah, it was a good win for Denver. It was clearly one where I thought that there would be a letdown in terms of energy. And there was clearly a letdown in terms of energy. But I'm hopeful in general that the Nuggets, like, this is one that they can just get past, and is one that's on the schedule. We will not remember this game other than the fact that Jokic had a season high in points. And that's just how a Wizards game should go. Honestly, like, I'm not sure if I prefer this version of Jokic or if I prefer the one that gets 15 assists, but he was dominant and the Wizards decided they wanted to single cover him. So he went and attacked the paint. That was exactly what he should do. So let's take a break. When we come back, we are going to chat about more Jokic dominance, and then the juxtaposition, I think, between Denver's backup center spots. But first, everybody, this podcast, as you know, it's brought to you by our good friends over at Superbook, who are changing the game as the most trusted name in sports gambling with a direct line to Las Vegas. And you can use that promo code MILEHIGH, and you will score up to $250 with Superbook's first bet bonus. Win or lose, Superbook will match your first bet up to $250 with promo code MILEHIGH. Download that Superbook Sports app, enter the promo code, and you'll get $250, courtesy of Superbook Sports. Visit superbook.com for terms and conditions. Gambling problem, call 1-800-GAMBLER. We'll be right back on Pickaxe and Roll.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts, so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Pickaxe and Roll, Ryan Blackburn here. Thank you so much, everybody, for tuning in. Let's chat about Jokic a little bit more, and just the juxtaposition here between Denver starters and their second unit. It is a little bit tough. I'll talk about Murray a little bit more here too. Murray was not good in this game. It is pretty funny to see him go from as dominant as he was like, what, 15 of 21, 16 of 21, something like that against the Celtics, where just absolutely locked in, very, very dominant. And in this game, he was 7 of 23, 3 of 8 from 3, which means he was quite literally 4 of 15 from 2-point range. And if I look at his box, if I look at the shot distribution that he had, he didn't shoot in the restricted area one time. Maybe there were a couple of them where just a little bit tentative, but for the vast majority of his shots, these are these mid-range shots where he's settling for like a 22-footer, a 17-footer, a 17-footer, a 14-footer, another 17-footer. Like these are mid-range shots that are tough, and they didn't drop this time. And like sometimes that's going to happen when you're in the mid-range. And a lot of times that happens when Jokic is off the floor, and Murray's more willing to take those tough shots in those situations, because Denver's just not going to get much better than that. And that's a not great situation, because Denver's going to have to be more intentional in the non-Jokic minutes in a playoff series where, and I know that this is the distinct difference between a Wizards game versus a playoff game, where you're okay settling for mid-range jumpers because the Wizards are not going to cook you on the other end. They're not going to make you pay for it. They are going to do a lot of different things, and they're not all going to be good. And Denver, a lot of this is the pressure that a team can put on the rim. A lot of this is Denver not having any gravity in the middle of the floor from the center spot, where DeAndre Jordan, he will catch a lob every once in a while, but for the most part, the teams will guard that, and there's no versatility with Jordan's game, and he is entirely a finisher. He is not a passer. He's not a playmaker, and if he's not catching the lob, then the opposing team is perfectly fine with that, so they just got to protect against that, and that's it. With Zeke, he's not going to go up for any lobs anyway. Like there was one play that Reggie Jackson actually had in this last game where he looked really good. And there was a nice Reggie Jackson pick and roll where he took the defense a little bit out of their element, and Zeke Nnaji finished with a wide open dunk as a result. That's great if that would happen a little bit more frequently, but that is a rarity when a defense is locked in, and the Washington Wizards are the worst regular season defense at home this year. And there's a reason for that. Denver's going to have to find something with their second unit offense that is a sustainable, clear, good, actual action with their bench. It is not the Reggie Jackson, DeAndre Jordan pick and roll. As much as Michael Malone may say it is, as much as he may go to it, there's a reason why DeAndre Jordan did not play against the Celtics. There's a reason why they tried to play Zeke Nnaji in the first half in this last game and only could play him 5 minutes because he had two screening fouls, had another foul, had a couple turnovers from those screening fouls, and Denver just did not, like, they didn't play well around Zeke, because every time they try to play around him, something goes wrong, whether it's on the offensive end or defensive end. When they try to switch out, Denver doesn't have the size to battle on the glass, or they just didn't really battle on the glass this time and just didn't work out. It's just so clear to me that Denver, like, this is the final frontier for Denver. They have enough creation. I trust Jamal Murray, KCP, Reggie Jackson. I trust those guys enough to create good shot opportunities for themselves and others in a playoff environment for a 6-minute stretch without Jokic on the floor. Like, I think that's fine. Murray especially. Like, I know that he'll be better. But I don't trust the middle of the floor, and I don't trust the fact that Denver doesn't have another option that they can go to if, like, Aaron Gordon's not going to play 24 second half minutes like he did against the Celtics. Like, they decided, hey, we're only going to play Aaron Gordon 31 minutes. And, yeah, it's just, I don't know, man. Like, the fact that Zeke couldn't play for more than 5 minutes in this one tells me all I need to know. This is against the Wizards. This is, like, Malone is clearly very frustrated with him. Clearly wanted more. And I don't blame him for wanting more. Zeke has not provided anything more. And he's trying hard. There's no question about that. But every time he goes out there, he makes these dumb mistakes. And it's just like, it's just very, very, very frustrating. And you contrast that with what Jokic has been doing and how easy he makes the game look on a consistent basis with how hard the game looks with, like, Cedric, I am not defending Zeke Nnaji. Zeke has made his own bed. He has not been very good in any shape or form. Like, what are you doing? Yeah, with how easily Jokic has been making the game look over the past 15 games, it's crazy how hard the game looks for every other center that Denver plays in their, like in their history, frankly. Mason Plumlee is the only one that you could really say, oh yeah, the game looked pretty good when he was out there. Isaiah Hartenstein, there was a brief time where Isaiah Hartenstein was good for Denver, but unfortunately he would have a screening foul every 2 minutes like Zeke Nnaji does, and you're just minimizing, like you're putting the team in the bonus, you're doing everything in your power to just ruin the flow of the game, and Zeke ruined the flow of the game with the second unit. In the second quarter. And it's just, it can't be this difficult. And in my opinion, Denver needs to find another body. I don't know if it's a 7-footer. I don't know if it's a 6'9" guy who can maybe pick and pop a little bit and give them a little bit of an identity there. But somebody else, maybe it's in the Jeff Green mold. Maybe it's somebody who can just play backup center as a small ball five and is just going to be in the right spot. But they've got to find somebody else than what they've done now, because if they rely on Aaron Gordon to be the only guy that can do it, he's going to get hurt. It's going to happen. And it's a very, very frustrating thing for Nuggets fans to like be super dependent on that. Like, obviously, if Jokic gets hurt, Denver's done. If Murray gets hurt, Denver's done. If Porter gets hurt, I don't think they're done, but they're close. If Aaron Gordon gets done, based off of how Denver's front court rotation has looked, Denver's about as close to done as you can get, because his versatility, his ability both to guard kind of 6'8" guys in the starting lineup and then to switch onto the bigs with the second unit is really, really important. And it gives Denver that flexibility that they need. I am very curious as to what Denver does if they don't have that as a card to play. And so if that is where you depend on, like for Denver last year, for example, one of the things that they could go to, if Aaron Gordon wasn't playing great, if he wasn't perfect, they could go to Aaron Gordon or to Jeff Green at the five and Michael Porter at the four and be just fine. Like they'd be okay. It wouldn't be as great. It wouldn't be as perfect, but that's something within their playoff rotation that they can do. Can they do that this year? Can they do that with Peyton Watson? Peyton Watson, who is just too young right now, is just too small from a physical standpoint in order to really match up like that. No, they're going to have to go to DJ. They're going to have to go to Zeke. They're going to have to go to, or they're just going to play Jokic the entire time, which I got to tell you, if they're playing Jokic the entire second half in a game two, even if it's the NBA Finals, they're not going to win that series because he's going to tire out. So I'm very curious as to how Denver handles the deadline, because it's now only a couple weeks away and they've got to find somebody else who's actually going to give them that, because Zeke was supposed to be the guy. Zeke is that 6'9", 6'10", 240, 245 kind of body where he's supposed to be able to switch everything. He was supposed to be the Jeff Green replacement. That is what Denver paid him to be. And now, like, he's clearly has gone backwards. I have no idea how they're going to do it. I have no idea what they're going to do. I don't know which is any team going to want him? Because he's going to be on the books for another 3 years, 4 years beyond this, because he's got a player option. So is the team going to want to trade for Zeke? Probably not. This is why the Vlatko injury was so tough, because he would be a pretty good option in this case, like just as a small ball backup five, where he's 6'8", can switch, like he's a big body, can be a player who runs as the fulcrum of an offense and can distribute and can make plays, but also can rebound and can be a smart offensive and defensive player and do some of those other things. I don't think it would have been perfect, but it would have been better, and Denver would just have another option there. So, like, Hunter Tyson's not an option for this. Jay Huff's not an option for this. Justin Holliday's not an option for this. Those guys are either too inexperienced or too small. And that's just that is the one weakness on Denver's roster right now. It is not the Bruce Brown replacement. Denver can figure that out. It is, does Denver have the physical bodies to actually operate when Jokic is off the floor and if Aaron Gordon gets hurt? So I'm watching that. All right, let's take a break. When we come back, oh, actually, there is one. Martin says, is it B key time? Is it Braxton key time? I would not be opposed. I would not be opposed at this point, because every time I've seen Braxton Key go in there, he's at least hustling and rebounding, and he's pushing the tempo, and he's making some nice highlight plays on the defensive end. He's another physical body. He's more of like 6'7", 6'8", but he is a bigger player where Denver could work him into the rotation. I know he's not a five. But I don't know if Denver needs like a full-time five. Like, they need somebody who can masquerade as one, and I think that Braxton could do that. You just run pick and roll with him in the middle of the floor. He plays DHO. He does anything that they could just like try to figure it out. No, we'll see. We'll see what whether that's actually a thing. But we're getting to the point where the fact that Denver has to go to Braxton Key is a pretty rough prospect. So I'm not looking forward to having that conversation with Michael Malone when he comes back, because Denver needs to find that consistency with their second unit. And the reason why the consistency doesn't happen is because of the center spot, where you take out Jokic, and no matter what Denver puts in, whether it's DeAndre Jordan or Zeke Nnaji, Zeke has been worse, but DeAndre Jordan hasn't exactly been great. Like, he does a couple of things. He'll grab rebounds, but his weaknesses open up clear deficiencies in Denver's second unit as well. And it's not the right pick and roll partner for Murray. Denver, like, that needs to be their goal next year, is they need to find a second unit option that can actually just run pick and roll with Jamal and not look insane doing it. So we'll see. All right, let's take a break. When we come back, we are going to do an MVP update and chat about just where Denver's at.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
All right, final segment, pickaxe and roll. Thank you, everybody, for tuning into the show. Hit that like button, hit that subscribe button down below if you're listening. All right, let's get into Jokic stuff. Let's talk about the MVP. I thought that this would be interesting for at least a little bit of a conversation here to wrap up the podcast, where I don't talk about the awards that often, I don't think. I maybe talk about it a little bit more than some, but the MVP race is one of those that Nuggets fans have obviously been privy to. They've been central to for the last 4 years, where Jokic won the couple years for 2021 and 2022. Those were contentious races. Then you lose to Joel Embiid in 2023 because of how dominant he has been. And because, frankly, even though Jokic's numbers were better, even though Jokic's numbers were not, I wouldn't say clearly, because Jokic actually had fewer points, but he was more efficient than anybody. He was doing everything in his power. He had the best plus minus. Like, there were clear signs that Jokic should have won last year, but the NBA world didn't really want to give it to him, and they decided to give it to Embiid. And that didn't work out very well for the NBA audience. But the problem now is that this is finally the year that I think Embiid really deserves the nod over Jokic, or at least is in that conversation where he should be over Jokic. The problem is that he hasn't played as many games as you would want, and the odds, I think, reflect that. I think that there are four guys that have really separated themselves in the MVP race so far. The books seem to think that there are five. They seem to think that Luka Doncic is also there. I probably have Luka as my fifth if I were to do an MVP ballot. But I think of the four guys, I'd probably have SGA, Joel Embiid, Nikola Jokic, and Giannis Antetokounmpo. Giannis, I think, is under the radar for obvious reasons. Like, he has not been as dominant as the other three, but he is still very good. He's fourth in the NBA in EPM. Apparently, he's now tied for Jokic at third at plus 7.2, and Jokic is down to fourth. Embiid has been the best per-minute player this year. I know that people will probably argue with that, but per minute, in the minutes where Embiid is not playing the most talented competition, he has been dominant. And then when he has matched up with some of these tougher teams, whether it's Minnesota at home, whether it's Denver at home, whether it's these other teams, he has been mostly very, very good. EPM has him as the, they have him at plus 10.3 EPM. The next highest is Shai Gilgeous-Alexander at plus 9.3. So there's a little bit of a gap there. And then there's an even bigger gap between third and fourth. Giannis and Jokic are each at plus 7.2. Now, the minutes do factor in there. Shai has played 41 games. Giannis has played 40 games out of 42. Shai's at 41 out of 42. He's missed one game. Jokic has played 43 out of 44. He has missed only two games. Or he's only missed one game, excuse me. But he's played the most of those other guys. And as a result, Jokic is second in EPM wins, where you have, I think, a very interesting discrepancy here and a very interesting argument forming here. The 65 games rule is going to be pretty wild, because if Embiid does not meet the 65 games requirement, then he's obviously out. Like, he can't be voted on for awards like this. People might feel a certain kind of way, but that's just the hard line. Like, you have to play 65 games or more. Embiid has missed 10 games so far, which means he can miss another 7 in the second half of the year. The Sixers have played only 41 games, so if Embiid misses 8 games in the second half of the year, then he's going to be out. I don't think he's going to miss 8 games. I think he's going to play. I think he's going to qualify, and he's going to get at least 65, 66, 67 games. Like, I think he'll probably be in that general vicinity. And so you kind of have to factor those into the odds. But the more games that Embiid plays, I think the more dominant he's going to look, because he's averaging like 35, 10, and 5 in his numbers, or something akin to that. There have been very few players in NBA history that have ever done that before, and Embiid has been very, very good. Superbook, the sponsor of this podcast, has the odds for MVP at this. Jokic at plus 200, Embiid at plus 200, SGA at plus 260, Luka at plus 850, and Giannis at plus 1,000. So they basically see three main candidates, and I think I probably agree with that. I think that Giannis would be a distant fourth for me, and then Luka would be a distant fifth. But a book that I won't name has Luka at plus two, or has Jokic at plus 200, Embiid at plus 200, SGA at plus 400, Luka at plus 800, and Giannis at plus 900. So there is a tiers, there's a little bit of tiers forming here where the top three guys are SGA, Embiid, and Jokic. I think that if Embiid qualifies, I think that there is a very strong case for him to win. I think that if he plays 66 games and Jokic plays 76 games or 77 or something like that, it's a little bit more difficult because I value MVP as the most impactful player on a season. The most impactful. And there are a couple of different ways that you can interpret that, but the one that provides the most actual value is often the one that plays the most. And if there is a significant minutes gap between Jokic and Embiid by the end of the season, let's say Jokic has played, 300 more minutes, 400 more minutes in that general realm. I'm not sure what the threshold is before I sit here and say, oh yeah, Jokic has provided more value, even if Embiid was the best player that year. And I think that there is a case for that exact thing happening, where Embiid has been really good. Now, he has to continue to show it. He's got to play on the road at some point. He can't just sit this. Like, if he sits in the Nuggets game, if he sits the Nuggets game in Denver, I would not vote for him. I would never vote for him if he sits, especially if there's no darn good reason. I would never, ever campaign for voting for Embiid in that case. Because Jokic, the thing that you can say about him is no matter the circumstance, no matter the situation, he's going to give his best. He's going to put his best foot forward. He's going to play. And like, there are going to be times where he isn't in tip-top shape and he plays anyway. He plays at his best and he plays at his worst. And that is what an MVP does, where you go through the tough circumstances in order to play anyway. I think that Embiid has sort of avoided that. And he might win MVP anyway, because if he still plays enough, like let's say he comes to Denver and he plays great and the Sixers win. What are Nuggets fans going to argue with at that point? Like, there's no real argument there. Like, if he goes on the road and still does what he does, then more power to him. He probably has earned it. He probably has deserved it. If he plays in Denver and like what I think will happen, will lose and Jokic will look like the better player in Denver, Embiid's numbers will go down, Jokic's numbers will go up, and you'll start to get that evening out where the situations are a little bit more even, and Jokic will probably take some, his odds will definitely rise in that case. I'm curious to see how it continues to go. The funny thing is here is that we're talking about Jokic versus Embiid, and I think that Shea is probably the best candidate, because what we're talking about between availability and impact and things like that, Shea right now is leading the entire NBA in estimated wins added, basically, at 11.3. Jokic is second at 10. Giannis is at 9.4. Embiid's at 9. Shea has not only been awesome when he's been on the court, but he's been on the court the entire time. He plays great. And he is a very, very dominant player. And he's come into Denver twice and beat the Nuggets. And like, that's what an MVP is supposed to do. An MVP is supposed to go in and do whatever it takes to get the job done. Shea didn't have his best game against Denver the first time around, and he still hit the game winner. And then he had 40 the next time around in a better situation. And boy, did they look good. Like, the Thunder have looked good. They have exceeded expectations massively. And I think that there is a legitimate case for Shea to win MVP. Now, it may not be his time. He may still be 1 year away from the rest of the NBA audience to really crediting him. But I think there's at least a case to be made that he should be the MVP over both of the bigs. And so they are still, like, neck and neck and neck, all three of those guys. I think Embiid's been the best permanent player. I think that Jokic is the best player in the world. And I think that Shea has been the most impactful player this year so far. So if I were voting based off of those criteria right now, I'd probably vote for Shea. I would not vote for Embiid. I would not vote for Jokic. I'd probably vote for Shea. And that might change because we're still only like half of the season done. Like there's still plenty of time for that to shift. But if I were to vote right now, I'd probably go SGA 1, Jokic, or SGA 1, Jokic 3, Embiid 2. Sorry, my brain is still not working. But that's okay. And Nuggets fans don't need to get tied up in this too much because, as you know, it doesn't mean that you're not going to win the NBA Finals if Jokic doesn't win MVP. Like, there are other circumstances, there are other things that will play into that. It's going to be very, very interesting. Jokic can still obviously win, and maybe he should win when it's all said and done. The way that, like, the track that he's currently on, Jokic, still very, very high. He is still, like he's moving up. The true shooting that he's put up is, like, 77 over the last 15 games. And the usage rate is back up. Like, there was a time where he wasn't really shooting, where he was doing what it takes to win, but not much more. And when you're in that situation, when you're not excelling at all points, then an MVP win, an MVP like can kind of fall through the fingers for a guy like Jokic. He hasn't really wanted that. He hasn't desired the MVP. He is still the best player though. Like there's after what he did in Boston, like there's no doubt in my mind. Zero doubt. Like, and I know you guys you're joking in the comments, but like, good God, I am not slandering Jokic. There's no Jokic slander here. I'm just looking at the numbers, as I did with Jokic in his first two MVP wins, frankly, in what should have been his third MVP win. I can understand why people would vote Embiid. I can understand why people would vote Shea. Jokic is still the best player in the world. And if you subscribe to that argument, then he should win. Then he should win MVP. So we're going to see what happens. We're going to see what Denver does going forward. We're going to see what Jokic does going forward and whether he looks like, because there's a possibility he continues to torque down. There's a possibility that he continues to torque up. And if he continues to play, and if Jokic gets the ones, if Denver gets the one seed and Jokic is leading that, then there is a very distinct chance that he actually gets it. Also, the fact that the Thunder are ahead of the Nuggets in the standings. Yeah. Oh, wait. Cedric is saying, Ryan, some idiot on Twitter made a fake account with your face and said he hates you. Damn. Got the haters. That's how you know you've made it big. That's how you know that you've made it big for sure. Standings in the West right now. Minnesota's at 30-12. OKC's at 29-13. Denver's at 30-14. Basically, Denver's effectively tied with OKC. If OKC is the first seed by the end of this, then Shea should probably get MVP. If Denver's the first seed by the end of this, I will probably lobby for Denver to be the MVP. Right now, Denver's 30-14 and Philly's 28-13. Like, they're percentage points off of each other. So maybe the record will actually differentiate this. We're going to find out. All right, now I'm done. That's going to do it for this episode of Pickaxe and Roll. Brought to you by our good friends over at Superbook Sports. Everybody, thank you so much for tuning into the show. I appreciate all the love and support on the podcast as always. Make sure to hit that like button. Make sure to hit the subscribe button. Thank you to all of the regulars for hanging out. Ben Mack, Rob, Cedric, really appreciate you guys for stopping by. Thank you so much, everybody, for tuning in. I'll be back probably on Wednesday after Denver plays in Indiana on Tuesday night. Will be interesting to see how they continue to affect this road trip. Thank you so much, everybody. We'll talk to you guys very soon.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.